First of all, let me gently remind all of you that this is not some fictional podcast or audiobook that you're listening to. This is a true story about the journey that no parent wants to find themselves on, the loss of a child. This is the continuation of the worst day of my life, May 16, 2013. A small portion of what I'm about to share with you may not be appropriate for children. My oldest son, Kelvin, was contacted by his mother sometime early that morning, the morning of May 16th, the morning that I lost Casey. I'm not sure when Kelvin arrived at the hospital that morning. Kelvin was the store manager at the time. Shortly after he arrived at the hospital, the store's district manager called Kelvin to ask when he was coming to work, as Kelvin sat next to his little brother who was no longer alive. At some point, a few of us were ushered into a conference room within the hospital on the same floor. It was a small room and the door was shut behind us. There was a male and female social worker in the room. I think their objective was to make an evaluation as to if any of us needed or wanted grief counseling. All of a sudden, Kelvin's emotions just boiled over. There was nothing that was said or done that triggered what happened next. It was just the fact that Kelvin had always taken care of his little brother. If there was a problem, Kelvin made it his responsibility to fix it. But Kelvin was not able to fix things for his little brother this time. He felt as helpless as I did. So Kelvin stood up in the conference room and threw a chair clear to the other side. What I didn't know until a couple of days ago is that the chair actually made contact with the male social worker in the room. Next, Kelvin ran out of the conference room. I heard glass breaking immediately afterwards, which I found out later that Kelvin had punched a glass picture frame, which was on the wall in the hallway. When I stepped into the hospital hallway, there was a trail of blood down the hallway. I caught up with Kelvin, who had ran to the end of the hallway and was standing against the wall. I had no idea what I said to Kelvin at that time, but I remember that his grandmother had also ran after Kelvin, and behind her were two hospital security guards. Kelvin eventually calmed down. He had to have three stitches in his hand. The hospital said that they would not be pressing charges. A few weeks later, Kelvin's district manager was fired. I assume it's because he wasn't a very good district manager. Kelvin's store had been one of the top 10 stores in the region before May 16th. After that day, I don't think Kelvin's career was all that important to him anymore. He was eventually demoted to assistant manager a couple of months later. Eventually, he left retail management altogether. That's all for now. Take care. It was May 15th, 2013. It started out as one of those days that became the new normal since Casey's leukemia diagnosis. I would drive 55 miles to work, work 8 hours, and drive 55 miles to the hospital and spend the night in Casey's hospital room. But this day became very different as soon as I walked into Casey's room. There was something very, very wrong. I recall first seeing Casey's brother, Curtis, in the room. He looked very concerned. Then I turned to Casey and immediately seen the reason for his concern. Casey's eyes appeared to be partly open, but he was not conscious. I called out his name several times, but there was no response. I shook him lightly and called out his name again, but once again, no response. Asked Curtis how long had Casey been in that state. I believe that Curtis said that Casey had been like that since he had arrived. I found the nurse and asked what was going on with Casey. She said that she had to get a hold of Casey's doctor. But keep in mind, it was 9:30 or 10 o'clock that night, at night. So there wasn't a doctor readily available. I was very concerned and upset that I could not find out what was going on with Casey and why I couldn't awaken him. I think eventually I did speak with Casey's, with a doctor, but I was unsatisfied with what the doctor had to say. Basically, Casey was unresponsive and it appeared that nothing was being done about it. Eventually, I fell asleep in the chair next to Casey's bed. Hours later, I think it was about 3 a.m., I was abruptly awakened. The light in the room was extremely bright, almost blinding for someone who had just woken up. There were at least 20 doctors and nurses in the room. My heart started beating very fast. I thought, oh my God, they're trying to resuscitate Casey. This can't be happening. This has to be a nightmare. But it wasn't a nightmare. It was really happening right in front of me. I prayed, oh my God, God, please save him. I did not want to stay in that room and witness this, but I could not leave. There was absolutely no way I could leave that room. The doctor kept placing his heart fibrillator paddles on Casey's chest. His body would rise 2 feet off the bed. They did this over and over and over again. They did get Casey's heart beating. My hope rose for a moment. Before they could transport Casey to ICU, his heart stopped again. At some point, a doctor walked the few feet over to where I was sitting near the bed and asked if I wanted them to continue to try to revive him. I'm thinking, are you seriously asking me that question? Of course I want you to keep trying to revive him, I said. So they did for a few more moments longer, and they said he was gone. About 8 years, 5 months later, and I can still see that all play out in my mind like it was yesterday. That's all for now. Take care. My 19-year-old son, Casey, had been staying at a friend of the family's home for a few weeks. I did not want him to be away from home for so long, but he was 19 and he was not interested in staying home at the time. On Saturday, March 9th, 2013, Casey contacted my wife and said that he wasn't feeling so well. He was having difficulty walking and he was in a great deal of pain. He said that he think he needed to go to the hospital. I was very frustrated about just hearing about the pain that Casey had been suffering with for weeks. Reliving it now in my thoughts and verbally, it still makes my heart heavy. Several weeks prior to March 9, 2013, Casey complained of his arm hurting, so we took him to his longtime doctor that he had since grade school. At the time, the pain was diagnosed as a pinched nerve. So the evening of March 9th, Casey arrived home from his friend's house and I took him to the emergency room. I had to almost carry him into ER. We were in ER for several hours. The early morning of March 10th, 2013, the doctor came out to speak with me. I do not remember much of what the doctor said that day. I heard the words leukemia and cancer. After that, I was sort of in a daze. This was not a tragedy that I was hearing about on the evening news or reading about it on social media. My 19-year-old son had just been diagnosed with leukemia. Casey was admitted to the hospital that day. He would only leave the hospital once for a very brief period of time over the next 2 months. Friday, April 26, 2013, Casey was supposed to come home until the following Monday. I recall Casey using a walker that belonged to my father to get around the house. His first day home was a beautiful sunny day. Casey took the walker outside and sat in the sun. I don't think he had many opportunities to do that at the hospital. We had prepared for Casey's return home by having the air vents professionally cleaned and totally stripping his room of everything. Then we had it repainted and replaced his bed. Nonetheless, Casey's one and only departure from the hospital since the leukemia diagnosis was cut short. Casey took a turn for the worse. Sunday morning, April 28th, half of Casey's face was sagging as if his speech was slurred as if he had a stroke. So I took him back to the hospital that Sunday. The doctor completed a lumbar puncture or spinal tap that day. The following day, Monday, April 29th, as I was driving to work, which was about 55 miles away at the time, I got a phone call from Casey's doctor. Up to that point, Casey's doctor had been very optimistic about Casey's prognosis. Casey was receiving chemo, and the hospital had set up the blood testing for all of Casey's siblings, myself, and whoever else was willing to find out if find a match for a bone marrow transplant. So I pulled off the road to speak with Casey's doctor. There was a lack of optimism in the doc's voice that I had always been there, and it had provided comfort, but not this day. The doctor said that the tests conducted on the previous day revealed that the leukemia had entered Casey's spinal fluid. I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I knew it wasn't good. I sensed that this changed everything. And right then and there, I just wept. I think that was the first time that I really wept since the diagnosis, but I'm not sure. I guess it doesn't really matter. There was no one else in the car at the time that was looking to me for strength, for courage, or for direction. So there was nothing holding me back. So I wept. Eventually, I composed myself and completed my journey to work. I drove the rest of the 55 miles. I arrived at work. I informed my supervisor that I was going back home, and that's exactly what I did. I turned around and went back home. That's all for now. Take care. Hello. I am Casey's dad. Casey was my 19-year-old son. Out of the blue, Casey was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia in March of 2013. May 16th of 2013, 6 days after my birthday, Casey passed away. Casey was the youngest of 7 children, 3 brothers from my first marriage and 2 sisters and a brother from my current marriage. The loss of my child has placed me on this journey, a journey that I never wanted to take. First of all, the question why? Why did Casey contract leukemia? I searched for the answers on the superhighway. Am I to blame? Did I mess up as Casey's dad? Is Casey's mother, my ex, to blame? Well, I did not find the answers on the superhighway. Just more questions. I'm not going to get into those right now. There'll be plenty of time for that. Anyway, let me tell you a little more about Casey. As I said, Casey has 4 brothers and 2 sisters. Curtis is the closest in age and the closest to Casey. They recorded rap music together. They made CDs and went out and sold them. It's hard for me to listen to the rap music that Casey made with Curtis and their friend Julian. You know, one of the recent rap CDs that Casey made before he passed away, included lyrics, "If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take." Those words are on Casey's marker. So this is my first podcast. I will be making more about the journey that I have been on since losing Casey. I will be asking others to share their experiences with Casey. I want you to get to know Casey. And if you knew Casey, I want to help you not to forget Casey. That's my biggest fear, is I don't want to forget Casey. I don't want anyone to forget Casey. As I say sometimes, I want the Casey flag to fly high forever. Well, that's all for now. There will be much more. Take care. The guilt that I feel since losing my 19-year-old son, Casey, to leukemia in May of 2013 is tremendous. You may be thinking, why would a parent feel guilty about losing a child to leukemia? It's out of your control. Well, first of all, I think that as a parent, your primary job is to protect your child no matter what. I failed to protect Casey from this illness. Whether I admit it to the world or keep it to myself, it does not change the fact that there is a feeling of guilt that does not easily fade away. Of course, it's not rational, but that doesn't mean that the guilt is not real. A large source of my guilt stems from the fact that I went to Florida for 2 weeks after Casey was diagnosed and in the hospital. Up until that point, I was at the hospital every day, oftentimes staying overnight. Initially, I had decided not to go to Florida. At the time, I was not thinking in terms of my son passing away. I was thinking more in terms of Casey's life was never going to be the same again, but he was going to survive this blood cancer. My wife and I was already looking into helping Casey get set up on disability. Casey's doctor was pretty optimistic at the time, believing that Casey would eventually be able to come home. Also, there was family members and friends at the hospital every day. But eventually, I decided to go to Florida for 2 weeks. I spoke to Casey on the phone every day that I was in Florida. With all that being said, looking back now, the only thing that really matters is that I lost 2 weeks with Casey that I'm never going to get back. Another source of guilt, or maybe regret is a better term, is that prior to Casey's contacting us to let us know he was in pain and needed to go to the hospital, he had been staying at a friend's house for several weeks. I felt bad at the time that Casey did not want to be home more with his family. I took it personally. I still do. I get to replay the 19 years of Casey's life over and over in my mind. When Casey was about 7, I remarried. Casey was still living with his mom at the time. Of course, Casey loved his mom very much unconditionally. I had to make a very tough decision to seek and get full custody of Casey and his brothers. The transition was very difficult for Casey. I have felt guilt from that day until now, even though I know in my heart it was the right thing to do. I took comfort in the belief that Casey was someday realize that I did the right thing by having him and his brothers come and live with me and my wife. Of course, I'm never going to hear him verbalize whether or not he felt that I did the right thing. Well, that's all for now. Take care.